All right, here we are. Common Sense Ohio, your weekly dose of Common Sense Ohio. This year is already a month old. Crazy. What are we, January 29?
It is.
2026.
It is crazy.
All right, so anyway, Common Sense Ohio brought to you by Harper Plus Accounting. I had a talk with Glenn Harper on my way in the other day talking about tax strategies. If you don't have a tax strategy, you probably should. And how do you get one? Well, it's easy. Call Harper Plus Accounting. Our sponsor could be your accountant. He's ours. All right. So this day in history, I'm gonna skip around. It was actually yesterday in history, the space shuttle Challenger explodes, and that was in 1986 on January 28. I still remember what was going on. I remember seeing it on TV. It was just like mind blowing.
Yeah. That was a teacher in space mission.
I think it was the first. I mean, we had sort of gotten comfortable. It's like I always say, look, anybody who watches these videos or some of my other videos, sometimes I get a question about where's the tip of my middle finger. Well, it's in the basement where my table saw used to be. And I always used to say, I think this is a lesson in life that we all have to, I have reminded myself, an old woodworker once said, look, he said, put a sign in the entrance to your wood shop that says there's a shark in here and it wants to bite you. Don't forget that. I forgot that. And I always said, it's not when I have to make one cut with a table saw. It's when I have to do the same cut 100 times.
Right.
You just sort of just go into, you get lazy. And the one time I didn't grab the push stick, I thought I can make it. Well, my finger was the push stick and it didn't survive. Here, I think we got really comfortable with these things. And then I think we also put pressure. We being the government, had pressure on itself. It was televised. We were promoting how great we were, all these things. And in the background, you had people saying, wait, these O-rings, the contractors were saying, yeah, but they need it now. We knew it was too cold. We knew it had frost. I mean,
yeah.
And we did it anyway.
Yeah.
We did it anyway. And it was horrific.
Yeah.
And what else is interesting is like 17 years later in 2003 on February 1st, we had the Columbia disaster that disintegrated on reentry. So we didn't really learn the lessons.
Yeah. I mean, it was a little different, but yeah, I guess the real parallel is, both incidents were triggered by, mechanical events that happened during the launch phase. The frozen O-rings failed because they weren't pliable anymore, and that's what took Challenger out. And then tiles fell off during the launch of Columbia. So during reentry, Mission Control knew from external views of the space shuttle that there were missing tiles. And of course, you know, the plasma-type hot gases that are generated during reentry are it's more than a blowtorch.
Yeah, and you can't get in. So, but here's what happened. So it was during the launch, a piece of insulating foam broke off from the space shuttle external tank and struck the thermal protection system tiles on the orbiter's left wing. Similar foam shedding had occurred during previous space shuttle launches, causing damage that ranged from minor to near catastrophic. But some engineers suspected that the damage to Columbia was more serious. I guess the point is like if we get comfortable. It's like, oh, it won't happen. Well, this happened this time, but, you know.
Got away with it.
They got away with it.
It's so, like not wearing your seatbelt and then, oh, I didn't have an accident today.
Haven't wrecked yet.
Yeah, so right. I guess I don't need a seatbelt. Well, so, that's true until you do need it.
And this is true. I'm not saying anything good or bad about anything other than, you know, we all sort of get comfortable with the way things are. We take risks that we don't even realize we're taking and,
yep.
You know, and you put other people's lives at stake. So I don't know what's to be gleaned from that, but let's get to the show, Norm. What do you got to talk about today?
Well, I would like to philosophically get into, since the term Nazi is getting thrown around by both sides, you know, people saying, no, I'm not a Nazi, and people saying, yes, you are a Nazi, and everybody in the Trump administration are Nazis or Gestapo or whatever. I think it's probably the right time for this show to review once again what a Nazi is for the historically illiterate, because there seems to be a lot of illiteracy around the term Nazi. So it's a contraction for National Socialist, and examples of that in modern times would be, of course, you know, Hitler, Stalin, the regime in North Korea.
Well, Stalin was a little different, but
well, no, he ethnically cleansed.
Well, I'm not talking about ethnic cleansing. I'm talking about what his brand of socialism was. So, you know, Stalin was looking to. Stalin would portray that I'm going to create a world utopia. Hitler was saying, we're just going to do that right here in Germany.
Well, that's the national part. Yes. But Stalin was certainly a national socialist in terms of boosting the USSR. You know, he believed in the ascendancy of his country, just like the North Koreans, just like, you know, you Pol Pot. You could go down a list of any number of people that did ethnic cleansing and also believed that their country was the shit. So how does that fit? How does that term? There was probably no more disgusting regime. There were ones maybe just as equal, but the Nazis did things like figure out for their slave industrial workers what was the minimum number of calories you could feed a human being and work them to death with 12-hour shifts and very little water and maybe 150 calories per day so that they were just walking ghouls until they fell over and died. That's the kind of stuff that real Nazis did. Real Nazis, you know, killed Anne Frank and her family. You know, real Nazis put people in ovens and used Zyklon B. That's what real Nazis did.
Or human experiments.
Yeah.
I mean, crazy stuff.
So what does the Customs and Border Patrol and ICE and Department of Homeland Security do that would in any way equate them to a Nazi? Here's what they do. They're enforcing laws passed by the people's representatives in Congress. All they are doing is enforcing standing laws, and they're not in the state of Minnesota. They are not getting help from the state and the city police departments because political leaders would rather grandstand than hold the crowd back so that a calm, well-planned arrest could take place without any violence. But no, we want chaos. So what has come into our lexicon now is you have dippy people who are truly boobs, really don't know what the hell they're talking about, talking as if anybody who's mean, anybody who's doing something by the book and enforcing laws, that's what a Nazi is. And that is so out of control that the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., memoed Tim Walz publicly, told Governor Walz, stop with the Anne Frank and the Holocaust analogies.
It's not even close, right?
It's not
even in the same universe.
It's so inapt and it's so out of control to make this. And you got all these people saying you're a Nazi and you're Gestapo. Well,
it discredits. I don't know what the right word is.
It's crazy.
It demeans the history.
Yes.
Of what the Nazis did.
Yes.
Because what's going on now is not that. And look, I think what's a Nazi. The Nazis were Nazis. I mean, they sort of created their own brand of socialism, national socialism, and then employed it in such a way that it just killed millions of people, right? And that's not happening. But here's the logic that I see that is going afoul. Well, look, these SS officers or the secret police in Germany, they wore masks. So these people are wearing masks. They must be the same.
Jeez.
They were the other one I hear all the time, and this has been going on for about 8-9 years now. Anybody who is a nationalist is a Nazi. So they say, look, the Nazis, here's the stuff the Nazis did. They had a strong national emotional presence, I'll say. So therefore, if you also have a strong national emotional presence, you're a Nazi. These are logical fallacies that are they're trite, they're cliche, they don't apply, they're not analogous situations. They are logically incongruent, and people throw it around rhetorically, to try to make their point. And then the danger of this is when authority figures do it on media. Oh, this is what the Nazis did, or this is these people are fascists. It's not the same. Now, look, I'm not saying don't be cautious about how we're policing. I'm not saying don't question what the government. I question the government every single day. We do it here on this show.
So do I.
but you
I got all kinds of Trump stuff today. I want to say that he's screwing up.
Yep.
This has nothing to do with pro-Trump, anti-Trump. It has to do with being historically illiterate, and you don't know what the hell you're talking about.
If there's nothing else to take away, you can love the United States of America as a nationalist.
Right.
I love the United States of America.
Right.
I am a patriot. Right. I think it's awesome. I'm not a fascist or a Nazi.
There's currently a movie playing in theaters about the 1980 hockey team. And when they beat the USSR
in the Olympics. Everybody was a nationalist that day, right?
Well, were we all a bunch of terrible Nazi nationalists because we were cheering for the U.S. hockey team? No, of course not.
Right, that's nonsense.
It's all bull crap.
People are cherry picking like, well, look, the Nazis did. Well, the Nazis walked on sidewalks too. So am I a Nazi because I walk on a sidewalk?
Exactly.
Or they, you know,
Hitler built a great highway system. So building highways is being a Nazi?
Right.
Come on.
And Troy over here, he's got a mustache.
Oh, God. You know.
It's a wider one, though.
He's not a Nazi. So, you know, what this is dangerous rhetoric that escalates the already boiling environment.
Well, and what is that danger? So I'm not bringing this up because I'm being a history professor, and I just want to point out how idiotic, you know, the Nazi accusations are. It's getting people killed. And the two people who were shot recently in Minneapolis were definitely amped up, okay, and probably felt like they were doing something worthwhile with their time being protesters against Nazis.
Well,
they had officialdom on their side of the view.
Well, not only that, righteousness.
Righteousness.
Righteous self-righteousness.
Exactly.
Girded by the official state message.
Exactly right. The state of Minnesota.
Now, here's the problem. And we've had police on the show. And for those who think I'm a pro, like I just am a cop bootlicker, or whatever you would say, I am not. I cross-examine police officers in court all the time.
Steve's a defense attorney. Okay, look, hello?
I have gone after cops more in the courtroom than you can imagine.
Yeah.
But philosophically, that doesn't mean that I think we don't need a police presence. And here's what I mean. The idea of police work is to protect the public, and not just in the public, sometimes from itself. So you have these protests out there, and what has happened is the state of Minnesota has not only permitted but encouraged this. And people say, well, First Amendment. I've given this breakdown before. I'll give it briefly now. The First Amendment is subject to valid time, place, and manner restrictions. In other words, you can't go out on the street and close down High Street or Broaden High in rush hour. You can't do it. You can't crawl on people's cars and not let them pass because you think the environment is going to explode or is going to overheat and we're all going to die. You can't do that because your peaceful protest is no longer peaceful.
Right.
The government is permitted to put valid time, place, and manner restrictions. So if you go to apply and get a permit, the government will let you do it.
Right.
And you can protest, you can carry your signs, you can make your point, you can set up tables, you can educate people, you can scream and shout at the top of your lungs, and it's a valid restriction to say, do that here and now.
Yes.
And had Minnesota done this, nobody would be dead.
That's right.
Nobody would be dead.
In both shooting cases, and whether they were righteous shootings or
correct,
not, that'll be for investigators and prosecutors to determine, and maybe even jurors if it goes to court. So I'm not getting into that. But in both cases, indisputably, both shooting victims, both victims of the police homicide, because it's a homicide, but it might be a righteous homicide. But in both cases, they were interfering with a police operation.
Right. Now, look, there are ways. Now, people would say, well, look, if the ICE hadn't been there, the protesters wouldn't have been there, and then people wouldn't be dead. And then you could say, well, look, if Biden wouldn't have let so many illegals across the border without vetting whether they were criminals or not,
exactly,
then ICE wouldn't have had to be there, and then these people wouldn't have been dead. You can keep turning back history all you want.
That's right.
But here's the reality. If we don't like the federal legal standards on immigration, if you don't agree, it has been the same standard for decades, and all you have to do is change it.
Right.
And we, our founders, you know, going all the way back to Shays Rebellion, right, where we said we didn't have enough federal authority, so we needed to figure something out. Like, we created a system that lets the people implement changes. Now, you may not like it because it's not as fast as you think it should be, but you know what? Wake up and get over yourself.
Exhibit A, the same guy that President Trump sent in this week,
Holman,
to try to slow down the rhetoric and get local cooperation, and we'll see if he gets any. It's highly doubtful, in my opinion. The same guy, Tom Homan, was director of ICE for a while under Barack Obama. When Barack Obama deported like 8 million illegal immigrants.
Without any fanfare.
There were no parades. There were no objections. There was nobody, you know, protesting in the street. Nobody called Barack Obama a Nazi or a Gestapo or Himmler or Goering. And nobody called him anything.
Right.
And he gave Tom Homan a Distinguished Medal Award for his service as director of ICE. It's the same damn guy who Trump has working on this situation.
And let's talk about the difference then.
No laws are different. It's Trump derangement, right? He is merely carrying out the very same laws that were on the books back when Barack Obama was president, the same laws that are on the books today. As Steve just said, you don't like the laws? Change them. Change them.
Yeah, we have process for
that. Duh. You know, go to Congress and pass a law and change it.
So look, here's in the other standard. You get sort of varying standards of opinion on this. You know, on the one side, you would have, we want to get rid of all immigrants who are not here lawfully. So if you're not here, you don't have a green card, and you shouldn't be here, and you cross the border legally, bye-bye, you're gone.
Right.
Then you have people on the whole other side of the spectrum that say, look, we should have open borders because we're utopian and everybody deserves whatever.
Right.
And a lot of people I know are sort of in the middle say, well, we just want to focus on the criminals.
Right.
All right, well, here's the problem. And if you're going to accept that, if you're going to take that standard, guess what's happening in all the places, all the cities, all the states who are not sanctuaried? Meaning they're not taking the position of Minnesota. They are working with ICE and saying, look, Norm, what's the best place to go find a criminal?
Right. Where the crime's happening.
No. Court. Jails.
Well, that's the safest place to make an arrest.
That's right.
No question. So, because they've been disarmed and
they're in jail in custody already.
Yeah. And you just take them.
So look, this guy's committed a crime. He's in our jail and, you know, wherever you know.
Or he's
States.
wanted. You know, he's been indicted or wanted,
so here he is. Yeah, right. So you don't even have to do it yourself if you're the city or the state. You just say, look, ICE, we have somebody here unlawfully. He's been convicted or charged with a crime.
Yep.
We'll cooperate with you fully. Just come here. And so this is the difference. If you don't do that, you push it out into the streets where it gets violent and chaotic. And I believe that the politicians on the Tim Walz side of things are doing it on purpose, and they're using these people's lives to make a political statement, and shame on you.
Yeah.
And shame on you. Now, there's not, the other side is not without criticism and fault. Norm, I'll let you take the lead, but I've got some real issues with some of the messaging that came out of the DOJ and the government and how they handled the messaging on some of this.
Yeah, so I've been incredibly critical of Barack Obama, and I think rightly so, that he jumped into the middle of the Trayvon Martin case or the case in St. Louis in the suburb out there with Michael Brown. And you know, hands up, don't shoot. It turned out that he never said anything of the kind. And it basically a predominantly black jury ended up acquitting the white police officer there in Ferguson, Missouri. So Barack Obama, though, jumped into the middle of all of these conflicts between police and people who lost their lives or who the police had arrested. And he jumped into it before the facts were known and before it was adjudicated. And he set a very bad example that I'm afraid the New York Times and the Washington Post and many politicians since, including the current administration, are still doing the Obama thing.
Well, and Biden did it on the Chauvin case.
Exactly.
It just is.
You don't jump into this stuff. The way you cool people down is you say, listen, I'm going to have the FBI investigate this. I'm going to set up a blue ribbon panel. I'm going to have the local county grand jury investigate. I'm going to have the local police or the BCI for that state investigate. And you tell people you're going to get to the bottom of it, and there will be a complete transparent report at the end of the process. And that's because we don't convict people in the court of public opinion. That's not where we adjudicate the justice system. Yeah. It's in real courts. It's in real agencies. It's through the process of discovery of evidence and the assessment of the evidence by people with cool heads who have some distance from the immediate emotions of what happened that day.
You're exactly right. So look, I'm a trial lawyer. I try plenty of cases, and it happens to all of us where you get emotional about something. And I stand up in court and I make an argument and I think it sounds great, but I was way too emotional. I was over the top. It wasn't logical. It comes off as a lot too much sometimes.
Yeah.
And I think here, Kristi Noem took both these incidents, both the Minnesota shootings, personally and emotionally, and she came out with premature, factually incorrect statements before hardly any investigation had been done. I think they even called this later. He was a domestic terrorist, and he had guns, and he had designs on mass shootings of police officers. There's no evidence of that.
She wasn't she wasn't sophisticated. The reporter teed her up, and she fell into the trap. He said the White House has called Mr. Preti a domestic terrorist. Do you agree? And then she went on to define some of the known things that Mr. Preti had, that he had a gun, he went and intervened in a police action, and things like that. And he was trained by the protest organization. And she said that's the very definition of domestic terrorism.
Well, almost as if because of that, he deserves to be shot. It's foolish.
Yeah,
it was, so Norm asked me that question.
Yeah, it was foolish.
I'll tell you how she answers it. So if I'm asked that question.
Yeah. Do you agree with the White House's assessment, Steve, that Mr. Preti was a domestic terrorist?
All I know is that we are conducting the most thorough investigation we can possibly investigate to figure out exactly what happened, why it happened, how it happened. We are going to hold those responsible accountable if that's what is necessary, and we're going to take every measure to make sure it doesn't happen again.
There you go.
How about that?
Exactly.
But then they repeat, do you mean you're a domestic terrorist? I'm not calling this man a domestic terrorist. I'm telling you, we are going to investigate everything, including that.
All right. And then we'll know the answer.
And then what about the White House saying that? You'd have to ask them.
Yeah, right.
So ask your source.
And oddly enough, it's been President Trump who's been the cool head and toned down his appointees in the cabinet and down lower ranks. He's the guy that picked up the phone and called Waltz and Mayor Fry and said, hey, we got to solve this somehow. You know, we've got to be able to arrest people who are suspected or have been indicted or somehow have escaped of serious felonies involving assault, rape, murder, etc. We've got to be able to take those people into custody in a safe, controlled way. Will you help us do that? And if so, I'll get Customs and Border Patrol the hell out because they're the people backing up ICE.
Help us. In the jails and in the courts.
Exactly. And then we'll disappear.
With this, and we're gone.
So
what you can't do, though, and I think maybe the federal government has to be careful here. What it can't do is capitulate and say, all right, you win. We're just going to pull our people out.
Right. They
because
can't
I think
that.
One thing has to be true. Look, Walls. Look, states. We are doing this. We are securing and deporting criminals and illegals, and we're going to start with the criminals. And, you know, like I said, on this side, you want to say we're getting them all out, but you can at least now find a compromise and say at least these criminals for now, we're getting out of here, and that is not going to change. We are not going to stop doing that. Your protesting is not going to stop it. And if we have tools at our disposal. We have financial tools at our disposal. We can just cut off your funding. You know,
yeah.
But I can tell you, I want to work with you, and I want to make this clear. We don't want any more people hurt We don't want to be on the streets. We don't want to fight to do this job. Please work with us and we will get out of your way. Please give us local law enforcement support. Please support us in the courts and we'll get out of your way.
Yeah. Right.
But you can't let the tantrum win either.
So let, if Steve, can I switch topics? So I mentioned, you know, Trump doing things totally disagree with. I think Steve may feel the same way on this topic, but this thing that they rolled out yesterday, the Trump baby account, where the federal government is going to gift anybody during Trump's term, including, you know, from the inauguration last year forward, till 2028 when he leaves office, during his, the pendency of his term, anybody who has a baby born during those 4 years is going to get $1,000 from the federal government for free. You know, they, it's just because a baby's born. And Michael Dell and his foundation is going to match that with another $250. So $1,250 total, $250 private sector, $1,000 coming out of our taxes. And I got a real problem with that because the way that Scott Bessent and Trump and the others are rolling this out as a wonderful idea is that it teaches a lesson about economics, about compounding, about entrepreneurship, et cetera. Well, no, it doesn't. This is as socialist as anything I've ever seen. Well, this is Mamdani level socialism. You're just giving people money. Like for, they didn't earn it. You're just giving them $1,000.
And does it, and look, you're going to get what you pay for.
Oh my God.
Hey, we might as well have a baby. I get a grand. Like it's lunacy. It's, and let's talk about, this is no different than forgiving a student loan. This is no different than giving money away during the scam. I mean, pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is no different than any of those things. It is inflationary. It is completely unnecessary.
Yep.
And it's not going to solve any problems. I bet you it will create problems. And this is here, you said this is why their proposed reasoning for this. And this is the Thomas Sowell quote I love. It's like, such policies are never measured or weighed or valued on their outcome, only their purpose.
The intentions.
Oh, what a great intent. You know, what a great idea. And then when they fail, when bad stuff happens, when there are more kids born out of wedlock because somebody wants a grand, and I'm not saying that's going to happen for sure, but why not? You know,
this program would have been at the very top, I think, of the Elon Musk, you know, the short-lived program of waste, fraud, and abuse.
And you can see the opposite. Somebody doing the opposite. We'll give you $1,000 if you don't have a kid.
And we know once Congress, you know, once a program like this is kicked off, that there's only two ways it's going to go. The next president's going to amp it up and say, well, hey, Trump did 1,000. I'm going to do 5,000. And the kind of figures they're throwing at people, if you get roughly on average a 9% return over time in the stock market, this is basically a 401k, people. The way they give you the money is it's an investment you can make in the stock market. And the idea is everybody will have skin in the game because eventually so many of these children will have this account in the stock market. So the idea of a 9% return, the way it crunches out, the way Charles Schwab, they came out with a projection, if you only keep it with the $1,000 and never match it with the maximum you could throw in on top is $5,000 per baby per year from the parents and $2,500 from the employer of the parents. So a maximum of $7,500 per year could be lobbed in addition. But if you just do the $1,000, invest it in the stock market, they project at a 9% return, you know, compounded, it would only come out to $6,000 and some change. But if you, and this is where they're really misleading people. They're saying if you do the maximum contribution by the time you're 18, instead of it being $6,000, by the time you're 18, if you put $7,500 in each year on top of the $1,000 seed money, that you'd have 300,000 by the time you're 18. And by the time you're 60, it would be $2 million. Again, if you kept throwing $7,500 into it every year and letting that compound. But that's crazy. There are other ways to have done this. You could have said, you know what? Make it a deduction. If a parent kicks off, if a parent of a new baby wants to start a stock market savings account for their baby, we'll let that $1,000 either be a credit or we'll let it be a deduction. Now, that would have been a much smarter way to do this. But instead, it's going to come right out of the Treasury, yeah, which is insane.
Right. They're going to print the money is really what's going to happen. I mean, look, we owe... It's all borrowed money anyway.
Yeah.
It's coming out of our pockets.
It grows the debt.
And it's, I mean, anytime you give money away, you deflate the currency or you inflate the currency. And this is no different. So,
well, little Ohio news. So a big national story right now is one of the two Democratic candidates for attorney general here in Ohio running against Keith Faber, who is the a putative Republican candidate to replace Dave Yost as AG. His name is Elliot Forehand. The other Democratic candidate is John Kulovics. And Elliot Forehand is way out of control. So he put out a statement that he wants to kill President Trump if he takes office as attorney general for the state of Ohio. And then he explained it more carefully because I'm sure the Secret Service is interested. He said, well, it would be after he's indicted, tried by a jury of his peers, and we present evidence of his crimes. And then I'm going to ask for a capital sentence of death on the president as the attorney general of Ohio. That'll be my goal if you elect me. And that is so out of control that people have been trying to figure out why he said such a thing. And I guess he's very desperate. He was not reelected as a state representative from Cleveland because he was involved allegedly in two cases of sexual misbehavior with two elected Democrat politicians, female politicians, who have accused him of being aggressive with them in some way, shape, or form. And so he did not get reelected. He lost his seat in Cleveland to another Democrat. And so this is his comeback. This guy's a Yale-trained lawyer running for AG in Ohio, and I'm waiting for Amy Acton and the other Democrats here in Ohio to disassociate and to renounce that sort of out of control statement that he wants to kill President Trump.
All right, so let me give you the quote. Show me the man, and I'll find you the crime. That's attributable to Leverentina
Beria, the head of the KGB,
the ruthless chief of Soviet secret police, the head of the KGB under Stalin.
Right.
Find me the man, I'll find you the crime.
Back then called the NKVD.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yep.
Yep.
So if that's not a prime example of this, I don't know what is. And you know, here's what's funny is that has always been associated with a totalitarian bent. And isn't that who was the AG of New York ran on that? You know, I promise you, if you elect me, I'll prosecute Trump.
Yes. The one who bought the property and basically committed the same exact crime she accused Trump of.
Yeah, it just is. It is so
lying
insane
on the borrowing form.
It's so insane.
Yeah.
And how people look at this. You know what? I got to break this down. I got to think this through. So let's chat this out a minute. How that becomes acceptable is an intriguing consideration.
Right.
Because if you asked anybody in a vacuum to comment on show me the man, I'll find you the crime, everybody's response would be, that's bad. Everybody's response would be, no go. But if you add emotion, if you add what I will call your own version of self-righteousness, of what your personal morality and your righteousness, then you end up finding a way to justify that, exactly the way Stalin did. This is how it happens. And the only way to prevent it is to not do it ever. So you have to resist that temptation. You know, it's like somehow you've become, if you have become so self-righteous that you're willing to violate that kind of obvious moral line or cross that kind of obvious moral line, then it's time to look in the mirror and reconsider. Because that line, whether it's Trump on the other side of it or anybody else on the other side of it, it's going to be you next time.
Well, in this environment, it's inexplicable to me that somebody running for the top cop position for the state of Ohio would talk about killing or executing, even after some kind of show trial, the president of the United States. After what he's been, there's been assassination attempts, including one where he got shot in the head during the campaign. Charlie Kirk got assassinated. Josh Shapiro's the Democrat governor of Pennsylvania, had his mansion half burned down. Are you kidding me? You're going to run for the top law enforcement position in Ohio, and you actually roll out your goal is to kill the president and use the word kill. I mean, it defies in kind of milieu that we're in right now with all the emotions, people calling people Nazis and Gestapo. This is the most irresponsible campaign I've ever heard of. It's off the hook. At least that the crazy lady, the AG in New York, at least she was, you know, going after some kind of real estate thing or a borrowing thing. At least there was arguably something to litigate. This is pure nonsense.
Let's take another look. You like real estate, Norm?
Yes, I do.
Is that a loaded question? You like real estate?
Yes, I do.
Well, why not go buy an island up in Lake Erie?
All right.
It's for sale.
Okay.
I think it's is it Catawba Island? They call it, dubbed the Hawaii of Ohio, according to Howard Hanna news release. Yeah?
It's 7 below 0 up there, and it's the gorgeous Hawaii of Ohio.
Trust me. It's a tiny, it's steeped in history, but it's nestled just north of the Catawba Peninsula between Kelly's Island and Put-in Bay. Anybody's been up there, by the way, I take people there sometimes, or back in college, people from out of town, we'd go up to Put-in Bay and they'd be like, this is Ohio? Like, it's gorgeous up there during the summers. Right now, you could probably walk across.
Yes.
But anyway, that island's for sale for a paltry sum, really, only $5 million.
That's a bargain.
A bargain at twice the price.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just needed to give us a little bit.
No, that's good.
A little bit of an Ohio breather.
So I frequently race at Put-in Bay at the airport there with one of my sports cars, and it is a great place to go during the summer. It is not where you want to be right now.
And people do live there. They're full-timers.
Yeah. You better have a freezer full of Lake Erie perch.
But if you want to own get your own slice of Hawaii, just go north.
Some other Ohio news that's kind of worrisome, and I think it reflects our increasing real estate taxes and electrical bills. Ohio is now number 5 in the country on credit card debt, with a median debt of $2,500 per citizen in Ohio, which puts us number 5 out of the 50 states. So, our legislature is not doing enough. We got to do something in this state to address the out of control, largely because of data centers, you know, and the Intel and other projects. The real estate valuations are off the hook, and people whose incomes have not changed, but their valuation of the property they own has radically changed. They can't keep up with it. And they're putting, you can put your real estate taxes on a credit card. I don't know if people know that, but you can do that.
Well, and let me tell you what a solution is not. I don't like the proposed solution to limit credit card to 10% or
no,
whatever. That's a false protection. It's going to do nothing.
I gotcha. But we have to do something. We've got to either eliminate the income tax, or we've got to drastically lower the cost of living. Something has to be done on the electricity front and on the real estate tax front, because Ohio families, particularly seniors and young people who are trying to buy their first home, they're getting priced out, and they're going to go into bankruptcy.
But that's not the only reason for credit card debt. I would say, let's give a Dave Ramsey shout out here real quick, because he would propose don't ever use credit cards on anything, because if you're borrowing money to spend, you don't have it to pay it off. Now, some people would say, look, I have a credit card. I use it for everything. I pay it off every month. I did an experiment last 2 years. I quit using a credit card. I use a debit card, or I pay cash, or I write a check. And you know what's happened? I spend about a third less than I did before. And I don't feel like I'm depriving myself of anything, but there's a psychological bent that happens, or psychological phenomenon that happens when you buy it on a credit card. Well, I just pay it later. It's easier to justify it, or you don't have to see it the next day, not in your bank account. So I would encourage everybody to live that experiment just for like 6 months, and you might be surprised how little you need what you were buying, and you might be able to eliminate some credit card that way with a little bit of self-control.
Yeah, but there's something wrong with Ohio if we're number five. Something.
Look, I'm not arguing with your premise. Public service announcement.
Yeah, absolutely, and I totally agree with that. Although they're going to make it harder and harder for us to spend cash because they want us to go all digital on currency.
Resist.
We have to resist that. Just like we have to resist other digital things, like this kill switch that all 2026 automobiles and trucks by congressional law in the transportation bill, what was that, 5 years ago, they added a provision that manufacturers have to put a kill switch for police in pursuit of your vehicle to be able to turn your car off remotely.
Yeah. Look, irrespective of the fact that I don't want police to be able to turn my car off ever.
Right. What if they do it accidentally?
Or what if they do it because they don't? What if they're corrupt, folks?
There are legal reasons why you're allowed to speed.
Right.
The classic one, right, when they pull you over, is my wife broke water. She's in the passenger seat. We're on the way to the hospital. Would you escort us? You're allowed to actually speed in that circumstance because it's a medical emergency. It is one of the affirmative defenses in Ohio law.
What could go wrong?
But so you've got a cop back there who's going to hit a button?
Well, and who's paying for it?
It's crazy.
You're paying for it in the next new car you buy because it's going to cost. How much does it cost each car to put a kill switch in it that functions this way? Government has again put its thumb on the scale of a private industry that's going to increase the price that you pay for your next fancy SUV.
So, being the real conservative that I am, let me wave this flag. We have a Republican Congress. We have a Republican president. Have they gotten rid of this provision? No, they have not, because the Uniparty runs D.C. to this day. Mm-hmm. They're still in charge. And the Republicans are just as in favor of this kind of crap as the Democrats are. So a pox on both their houses.
All right. What's good and bad?
Bad? I'm going to have to say Governor DeWine. He is doing a Tim Walz flip out over the prospective enforcement of the immigration laws now that the Haitians in Springfield, Ohio have lost their temporary protection status under President Trump. There's 500,000 Haitians under the TPS in the United States, and 15,000 of them are in Springfield, Ohio, is the rough estimate. And Governor DeWine, who hails from Springfield, Ohio, seems to think that this is an emergency, that somehow Ohio needs to, quote, get ready for ICE. He needs to get out of the way and cooperate with the federal government.
How about saying this? If there are illegal people in our state, particularly ones that are also criminals, we intend to work with ICE and make sure that we keep Ohio and our cities as peaceful as we can while still trying to enforce the law and protect the rights of our citizens. How about a statement like that?
How about a statement like that? And then my winner? My winner this week would be the meteorologists of this country, including the NOAA federal agency. They predicted this storm pretty darn well, when it would hit and how much snowfall we were going to get. And so my compliments to them.
All right. So I'm going to start with the good. Troy, catch this softball, man. We got guys like Troy, who a full-time law student. He's got a side business, a small side business, and also hustles on the side, getting out there at 4 a.m. or midnight to whatever with a plow truck, keeping our streets clean, including our parking lot right here at Channel 511. I came in on Tuesday and today to a mountain of snow piled up covering one of our parking spots, by the way.
It's a very small lot. It's very hard to navigate where to put it.
But hats off to guys like you who do get your butts out of bed and get out there in these treacherous conditions and get the roads clean. Because by and large, I live out in the country. My roads are clean.
Well, I want to know why Troy canceled the appointment to power wash my house in sub-zero temperatures. I don't understand that, Troy. So, I may call the Better Business Bureau and file a complaint on that one.
All right. So what's bad? Anybody who listens to me regularly, they know that I hate it when the government puts its thumb on the scale of anything private. I hate it. It's just like, it's nails on a chalkboard. Yeah. It's dissonant music. I hate it. And now, so 10 years ago, Ohio prohibited questions about past criminal convictions on job applications for public sector employees. Look, I hate that. But now it's even worse. There's a bipartisan bill to try to extend that to private employers' job applications. So here's what they're saying. You're not allowed to ask somebody on a job application if they've got prior criminal convictions. And this looks like it's bipartisan. And you've got a Republican Senator Kyle Kohler from Springfield, who chairs the Workforce Development Committee, whatever that is, credits Blessings and Craig with streamlining the bill to its fundamental. I mean, I think it's going to pass. And of course, they say that here's what they say. There are so many things that people did when they were younger that at the age of 40 to 45, they've changed their lives. Well, there's also so many people who have committed crimes that haven't changed their lives that don't want to tell you they haven't changed their lives. And I don't care either way, frankly, folks up there at the General Assembly. I would prefer to ask and make the decision on my own as a private employer. And I will tell you this. I have hired people with prior criminal convictions after I knew about it and talked to them. I have fired people who had criminal convictions who lied about it when I asked them and didn't tell me. And then it comes up. Why did I fire them? Because they were crappy employees, as it turns out, and there were some other problems. And then I find out later. So look, thank you. I would prefer to run my business my way, if you please. And if you want to make a change, if you want to really dig into this, then and hats off to some of the general, they've done some of this.
Yeah.
Is that they have reviewed and looked at and expanded Ohio's expungement and record sealing laws and allow more people who have committed past discretions to clean up their record, the lawful way.
That's the best way.
Right? So do that. Don't put your thumb on my scale, folks. I'm trying to run a business here. Wait a minute, I'm walking here. All right, Troy, good and bad. Now he's on the spot.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know I was getting called up on. Bad, I think you mentioned the Better Bureau.
Better
Business Bureau.
Yeah.
From a side business guy, I think that's like a giant scam.
Yeah.
Angie's List, same thing. Yelp, scam.
Yeah. They're terrible.
Hated it. That's like the Power Three. They're like the Illuminati of just ruining small businesses. Don't listen to anything to them. Good. Hopefully I'll be graduating law school. So this was probably my last big snowstorm. So I was like sitting there kind of enjoying it. And it was absolutely, my arms are juiced from, because you plow the lots, which is easy. It's the sidewalks.
Yeah.
Suck. My arms are just like destroyed still. So it felt good getting my last big storm in. And it was the biggest in like a decade.
All right. Awesome. Well, hats off to Troy and the rest of the snow warriors that have been out there making our streets clean and safe. Common Sense Ohio coming at you right from the middle each and every week. Till now.